Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 54. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey all, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And I am this evening's host, Sam. This episode is being recorded on June 20th. 2024. Today we are going to be discussing stuff and things. So with that, let's get started. Hashin. Fanime just happened. That was at the end of May. Both Mike and myself attended, and we both did very different things. Mike, you had more of the con experience. So what was it like this year?
I mean, I didn't have that much of the con experience. I briefly wandered through Artist Alley. I didn't make it into the dealer's room at all this year, and I spent barely any time on the concourse. But other than that, yeah, I did a few panels.
Well, between the two of us, I guess we did the full experience then, because I didn't do any panels, and I did go to Artist Alley and the Dealer's Hall and spent most of my time in the concourse.
Okay, then between the two of us, we have a full con experience.
Huzzah.
My brain's failing me. What is the concourse?
That's just the main convention center hallway.
Oh, just kind of like in between everything else. Just
yeah.
Okay, and but also large.
Did they still have stage zero in the concourse?
Yes, yeah. They did.
Okay, so yeah, then it's kind of like the greater overall event hall area, and with a singular area with a stage of certain scheduled activities.
Okay, so kind of like unseated activities and stuff goes on there.
Yeah, except stage zero does have seats, but yeah, there's really no, other than stage zero, there are no activities out there. So people walking between stuff and...
taking pictures of cosplayers, yeah.
Yeah. I see, okay. Random hanging out and causing shenanigans and
yeah.
Probably not doing the bad behavior things that were done in the early 2000s cons of the walking around, what was it, the yaoi sticks where they would walk
the
around.
Paddles, the yaoi paddles.
And, yeah, yaoi paddles and like literally just randomly... assault people and hit them with these wooden paddles. That was a great, really, really mature job, guys. We're great.
Yeah, thankfully those have been dead for about, what, 15 years or so?
Yeah,
Sam?
Yeah, that was probably a good choice.
I think they're officially written into the rules that you're not allowed to bring those things.
I think we discussed that on one of the previous ones, but every time you're just like, oh, man.
Yeah, that was a thing. It was a real thing.
I forget if we mentioned it last year, but yeah, one thing in the past, I don't know, Sam, what would you say, 5 years or so that's different from Fanime's past is that you have to actually have your badge to get into the convention center itself.
Oh yeah, that's true. That is a new thing.
Which means people ghosting the con have to stay outside.
And one other thing that I thought was interesting, and I'm pretty sure they didn't do last year, was they had... quote unquote metal detectors, but they weren't actually metal detectors. They were, I think they might've been millimeter wave scanners with some extra juice in them for also metal, maybe.
AI related to detect like weapon-like shapes or something, but that have actually been tested on anime con stuff. And so mostly didn't trigger on things people were bringing. Like they, I guess, can tell the difference between a fake weapon and an actual one.
Although, I was going in and out of the con quite a bit as I went, you know, back to the hotel room. Since this year, I actually had a hotel room. And I went in the first time with no problem, but every time after that, I got stopped for my bag because I had my laptop in a bag with me, along with a couple of other things like headphones and stuff. And they stopped me every time to where the guy checking badges knew me. And he would be like, oh, no, that guy's fine. It's just his laptop.
It's like, oh, hey, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, I was back at a nearby hotel again this year and didn't have to take a shuttle. I was at what's recently been my usual hotel, the Hyatt Place, which is the one that's across the street from the Hilton. I forget what it used to be called way back in the day. And I like it because it has a free breakfast bar that's actually pretty good, especially this year. Like in 2021, it was pretty much just grab and go stuff, but it's mostly back to 2019 with like actual hot bacon or sausage and scrambled eggs and such.
So you basically can load up in the morning and then do pretty much make it last until dinner time.
Yeah, I mean, I was usually heading over to that, I'm drawing a blank on Sofa Market, the food hall, like a street down for lunch most of the time.
That's a good place to go. A lot of variety there. So what were the panels that you went to, Mike?
Let's see. I went to Giles, Anime and Manga for Parents, just because I kind of always go to that because it's an early Friday panel and there's not usually that much else to do that day.
Mm-hmm. How well was that attended?
There were actually a few parents with questions this year. It's interesting how it's varied. When he started giving it, there were a lot more parents who were going with their kids who were like, what the heck is this anime stuff anyway?
What is anime?
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, like, what was the, just based on their appearance, like the age range of these parents?
Fairly young, I feel like.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are still people who are normies and haven't been exposed to anime that much. Or who are looking for age-appropriate title recommendations.
I think that's a completely reasonable thing to get, which is harder than it feels like it should be.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, we have tons of kid friends in age from these days, from ages like 6 to 15. We have 30 kids in our orbit.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. They like us. You make people donuts, you'll have a lot of friends. It really does vary. And like one of them, she's 9 now, but for the last year or so, like she's been a huge Cardcaptor Sakura fan. And I'm just like, and her dad asked me, he's like, hey, I saw her kind of watching the show. Was like, is this? He was like, literally, was like, is this okay? And I was like, oh yeah, that show is like perfect. That is like the perfect show to watch, like at that age. Mm-hmm. Like that's,
yeah, it's designed for her.
Yeah, it's designed for her. It's completely age appropriate. It's but at the same time, it's a really cool show too. It's a great show, and it's one that I've started started rewatching again. Because she was watching it, so I could have something to talk about. Mm-hmm. Which she's like, what, you're watching the same thing I am? And I'm like, well, yeah, the show's really freaking good. It's like peak Madhouse animation too. It's so nicely done.
Oh, I forgot it was Madhouse.
Yeah, it's Madhouse 99. Yeah, yeah. Madhouse
90, yeah, really late 90s early aughts.
with a budget and everything anyways. But it's one of those things where I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, what would be another appropriate show for her to watch? And I'm like, that she would also be interested in. And it's kind of like, okay, I mean, there's a lot of Ghibli movies, but I'm like, what would be some other, I was even trying to think, like, what would be some other, like, TV shows that would be good, that would be like, oh yeah, yeah, this is age appropriate, and also not just complete garbage.
Well, and also, it's like, a lot of the more appropriate things are already brought over on TV, right? Like, the kind of things you would think of, like, Pokemon or Digimon and those kind of things.
Yeah, that's like, true. So it's not like, not, oh, this is kind of cool,
good,
but actually, yeah, they're not the worst shows.
I mean, the recommendations I can make are stuff that's like ancient, like Doraemon or like Crayon Shin-chan. Although, I don't know, Crayon Shin-chan, depending on your interpretation of like crude humor, it might not be appropriate. I mean, he talks with his butt most of the time, so.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to interest this 9-year-old girl. No.
That's almost like the equivalent of Simpsons in Japan. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like 9-year-old boy, maybe. Giles was pointing out, like, you know, he says a lot of cases, like, okay, parents, your kids are going to love this stuff. If it bothers you, you leave the room.
Yeah. It's fine to watch. You might not like it, but the kids will love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Bluey.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I still, honestly, I've been, like, trying to think of, like, okay, well, what's another, like, good show that she would be interested in? Like, I've thought on it for a while, and, like, I've honestly, I've had trouble. Like, even, like, Sailor Moon, like, it's a great show, but it's not, it's a little bit older.
Right, so certain things that are, also certain things that were normalized back then are kind of icky now, to say the least.
Yeah, I haven't watched that in a while, but, like, their character is also, like, very different with, like, the Dojiko, you know, the super clumsy, whereas, like, it's another really cool thing in Cardcaptor Sakura, where, like, Sakura, she's, like, super athletically competent.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, there's a lot of great things about that show, but, so, anyways, that's my aside to say, I'm curious to hear what other things, that's actually one of those panels I probably, if I were there, I probably would have gone and been like, okay, hey, here's this person, alright, what about this, what about this, what about this?
Yeah, it's funny, because hindsight, as somebody who grew up watching anime, I realized I grew up watching completely age-inappropriate stuff, because I right. cannot, for the life of me, make recommendations, even off of the stuff I watch. I'm like, yeah, I watch Dragon Ball Z as a 9-year-old, I'm like, eh, depending on your perception of martial arts and stuff, then violence, like, that show's not, you know, gonna fly for some parents. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's pretty, you know, average by anime standards, as far as, like, you know, like,
yeah,
maturity level of, you know, but then I'm thinking, like, yeah, I was watching, like, Demon City and, like, you know, like, stuff yeah. that was completely yeah. age inappropriate. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not the right, yeah, that's why I have to, like, ask my sister what's okay to show my nephews. Oh, Hunter x Hunter was okay with her, even though it has a few things that are pretty dark, but I mean, One Piece, I feel like One Piece is pretty much globally acceptable now.
Yeah, that's true. It's also the question too of, like, I don't know if she would be interested in those shows.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to, and yeah, this is where you just have to kind of, you know, find things that are completely different from Cardcaptor and say, what do you think of this? Because if you just keep showing her things that are like Cardcaptor, she's not gonna, like, necessarily expand her horizons either.
Yeah,
that's true.
Maybe she'll like Grappler Baki.
Hey, you never know. She might be the next, you know, like, underground, you know, maybe she can end up becoming the author of the girls' version of Birdie Wing, but with MMA. Although I guess that technically was already written with.
Oh yeah, already done.
Like,
what was that one called again?
Oh, the one I love. Oh gosh, why am I blanking on it? Now I have to look it up.
Something about H. Something. I don't know.
Okay. Anyways, we can continue on. I was just I'm always curious on that. So if anyone has any good recommendations for things like that, I'll take it. I'll always take them.
Teppu is the one I'm thinking.
Teppu.
Of.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The criminally underappreciated franchise in the like brawler themed manga. But anyway. So yeah, it's good to see here that Giles is still doing his thing. I mean, that guy's Fanime royalty, so.
Yeah, really, he was, now that Yamaga's not going, is he, like, gonna be the longest running guest?
Absolutely, he is, by far.
I've never really been part of the Fanime culture. Who's Giles, aside from the Watcher from Buffy?
Giles Poitras, he wrote the Anime Companion and the Anime Companion 2 back in the day, and more recently has done Tokyo Stroll, which is kind of just a guide to random off things that you might find while exploring different neighborhoods, and that he keeps a web supplement up to.
He's probably, what, approaching his 70s now? Like, he's an older
gentleman. Yeah, he's retired. Now. I think he retired around or right before the pandemic.
Yeah. Wow. So he's a true anime boomer.
Yeah, he was a librarian for a while, or as his career rather, I think, for, like, not sure if it was a religious school or what, but anyway. I kind of consider him like the Mr. Rogers of anime, as far as being very friendly and soft-spoken and patient.
Guess if you're a librarian, that's kind of the temperament you need, right?
Yeah. And just also, he's been an anime fan since I think sometime in the 80s if or so. And
yeah, I've had the privilege of having dinner with him multiple times while I worked at Fanime. He's a fascinating person, just a hugely deep treasure trove of knowledge about not just anime manga, but just like Japanese cultural stuff within the United States. Really cool guy.
He's really into like the NHK historical dramas and other things like that as well. I think into Kabuki, just more into Japanese culture in general, but plenty into anime and manga.
That's cool. Okay.
So anyway, before that, Thursday night, I actually got there for night zero this time, picked up my badge, which was dead easy, maybe 20 seconds. They had the same system they did previous years, but I felt like the throughput for picking up the badge was even better this year.
I heard it was perfect on Thursday night, and then I went in on Friday morning. I got my badge, but then like immediately after I got my badge, like all the systems went down.
Sorry to hear that.
Stuck for like a half hour. Yeah.
Well,
it's fine for me.
Gotta love tech, but
yeah.
Yeah, I guess the other people I was with picked up their badge either earlier or later because no one that I talked to got stuck in that.
Oh, good.
Did they have the same COVID precautions before or anything, or have they canceled all of that?
Almost nothing this year. They had announced having the same COVID precautions last year, except dropping the vax requirement. But then 2 weeks before con, they dropped the mask requirement, which made me a little annoyed, especially on behalf of, say, disabled people who had planned to come because it was one of the last cons with a mask requirement. And by 2 weeks before the con, travel plans are non-cancelable, Fanime badge has always been non-cancelable, and hotel rooms were non-cancelable after, like, late April, at least without a penalty.
Yeah, so, in my opinion, I was glad about the mask policy because, I don't know, it's not fun to wear a mask, especially in an anime convention when you're trying to talk with friends and whatnot. But yeah, doing that, announcing that at the last minute is no bueno. That sucks.
I did end up wearing my mask for the most part indoors, but I'd say maybe 10 to 30% of people were, depending on the panel. I was kind of glad I did because at least one of my friends on staff came back with COVID from the con. So
yeah. I got COVID, but like I caught it from Ace, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had my booster when I got my flu shot, so I was like a cold, so.
Fair enough.
I survived, yeah.
As far as I know, I've avoided it so far, so I'd rather keep it that way as long as I can. But, you know, I'm mostly not wearing a mask most places anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't when I went out to eat, obviously, and I felt more chill about going to eat this year, but.
Yeah. So there were a lot of people wearing masks of their own accord, but there were nothing required.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, instead of the checks for that sort of thing, they had the metal detectors this year, which I guess the city and convention center were trying to force them to have last year, but they successfully pushed back on that while they were trying to find a solution that would work for cosplayers, and the one that they found seemed pretty good. I would not mind metal detectors nearly so much if everywhere had ones that worked like that, as opposed to, like, you have to take everything out of your, you know, do a bag check and take everything out of your pockets, and...
Yeah.
That's so impractical for, like, the vast majority of cosplayers.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like even more than the tooling, it's gotta be, you know, that the staff is trained to be like, okay, this is what this convention is, like...
Yeah.
You have to, like, understand this, and the people that are here and how things are going.
Yeah, this guy's gonna have 15 guns and it's okay, that's normal.
Yeah, as long as they have the bright orange tape on it, totally okay.
Yeah,
I don't, like, the only other con I've been to with metal detectors was Crunchyroll Expo before at the same venue in like 2018-2019, and they didn't have nearly as cool a metal detectors, so I was careful about not bringing as much in with my bags, and I also probably bought less at the dealer's room because of not wanting to haul it back and forth through the metal detector. But they at least also were Crunchyroll Expo's solution was just massive parallelism, like metal detectors mm-hmm. at every, like just a huge row of metal detectors at the entrance. And that also dealt with the lines pretty quick. But Fanime's new metal detectors worked fine, even with only like a couple stations open, because you could, for the most part, just walk through them. The one exception was when I was coming back from lunch on, I think, Saturday, and they only had one lane of metal detectors open, so there was like a 15-minute line just because of that.
Oof.
Yeesh.
But that was the only time I had any holdup whatsoever from them.
It's not too bad, considering...
Except, going back to Night Zero, so I did the swap meet that night, and that swap meet, they only had one lane of traditional, or two lanes of traditional style metal detectors, so that slowed things down. No, it was just one lane on Thursday, and I guess they had a second lane on Friday, but either way, so I fortunately was in line like a half hour before, so I didn't get held up too much, but when I left at like 9:30 and the event started at 7:30, so it had been going for 2 hours, the line, because of the holdup for the metal detectors, was still wrapped all the way around to the far end of South Hall.
Ooh, jeez.
So what is the swap meet?
Swap meet is, you know South Hall, the big tent for...
Nope. Pretend I've never been to Fanime. Anyway. I went there once in the 90s.
Okay, anyway, swap meet is just where people who want to get rid of their anime stuff bring a bunch of it and then set up a blanket or otherwise space on the floor of a big room and try and sell it all to you.
Okay, so big anime yard sale. You don't have to do you have to prepay to get a spot, or you can just kind of open, or...
I think you can... You have to pay something to get a spot, I think. I've never actually sold at it. Okay. And there's a separate...
There is at least registration.
Yeah. But okay. I don't think you have to register, like, way in advance. I could be wrong on that. Like, okay. I think you can do it the night of. I, again, could be wrong.
And then I assume everybody takes whatever payment they feel like taking, whether cash or they have their own Square or Venmo or whatever these days. I'm sure everyone just Venmos everything.
Like, most everyone had Venmo. I was still using good old cash, but that's, you know, old habits die hard. I still haven't updated Venmo with my bank account after I was forced to change my number. I should probably do that one of these years.
Okay. All right. What other cool panels?
Well, anyway, at Swap Meet, I picked up Shock, a Lum figure that was pretty nice, and some Lum, like, mini collector's figures, and some Lum, like, tiny can buttons made of, out of, like, manga art from UI. So, yeah, very Lum related, because I didn't really want to deal with collecting more things. One or two, it just makes it easier to say nope. I've got one thing I'm looking for, and that's it.
Well, that's cool,
but it's cool when you find it.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, there was like one other fairly nice figure, but I said like, okay, if this is still here when I make the rounds, I'll buy it, and it wasn't, so I'm fine with that.
Nice.
Let's see, other panels. Then I went to. Nick Goose's The Case for Anime Clubs panel, which was more or less just him talking about like forming a small anime club on Discord of all places, which I guess I sort of have informally, but so it was kind of interesting.
How well attended was that?
Had a couple dozen people. Okay. He may correct me on that. I'm sure he has a number. it was still Friday evening, so not as busy as...
Sure, Saturday's the real crowd.
Stuff. Yeah, and then after that I got dragged off from some friends to... I think it was, with him that I ended up just going out with... He and some friends for food at one of the other food courts, San Pedro Square or something like that, in the area.
Well, so that's a nice place.
That, was my Friday con, pretty much just a couple of panels and then eating.
Nice.
With a random group of friends, which is mostly how my con went. Do like a couple panels in a day and then meet up with a random group of friends for food.
Yeah, to me, that's what Fanime is mostly about. Just at this point for me, Fanime is mostly about just seeing old friends. So that's why I'm generally just in the concourse or in gaming, just kind of seeing if I see anybody. I didn't see many people this year. The one thing that I did do at Fanime that I thought was neat was they had an Itasha exhibit. So,
oh, awesome.
Sadly, yeah, I never actually made it into that, but I wanted to.
So was it indoor? Like, they actually had the cars indoors?
Yeah, it was actually where they had the swap meet. So it's a really large, you know, it's a big hard tent area, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just drove a bunch of Itasha in there. And they were all very, and I guess for anybody who doesn't know what Itasha is, it's just cars that are basically decorated with wraps of anime stuff. There were some low effort Itasha in there, but only like one or two. There was, I think maybe it was only really one that was like, it just had a lot of stickers in the windows. And by a lot, it was like, you know, every window had one sticker or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of them seemed like they were like legit, possibly sponsored cars, from various, anime companies. They were pretty good. My favorite one was, oh man, I think I posted it in Discord. I can't remember the property, but it was like some goofy looking, no Bishoujo girls in it or anything. It was like some weird animal SD stuff.
I don't remember seeing that image. I might have missed it. And just, you know, because I'm sure our listeners probably all know, but Itasha comes from, it's great Japanese because it comes from Ita being Italian and Sha being car, so it's like Italian car, but it's also a play on Itai meaning pain, so it's this double play on like a fancy Italian car, but it's like just so painful to look at, and it's just become Ita Sha, which is hilarious and wonderful.
And then I assume Ita bag came from that.
Yeah, same thing.
What is Ita bag?
Taking a bag and decorating with all sorts of anime.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So the backpacks, like, bags, yeah, those sorts of things.
Pin badges are a common thing. Or if you're like a character loyalist, it would just be like all the merch you can find for a particular character. I think it was going to be not everybody can afford to have a car, you know, wrapped.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. High schoolers or whatever, junior high kids that want their thing to express themselves. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, functional adults in this economy, you know.
Yeah.
it's also a way to, like, you know, you buy all these tchotchkes, and it's a way to, like, if you buy 10,000 keychains, well, you're not going to put them all on a single keychain. So how are you going to display them? You're going to put them on your bag, right? Like, so, or can badges and the like. You can only normally, in normal fashion, you can only display like one or two of those at a time. So they have these bags that they have, just put them all on.
Yeah, they have bags with like a clear plastic window over them.
You guys don't wear keychain bandoliers at all times?
Yeah,
there's an idea.
Am I the only one who does that at all times?
Yeah, no, I keep meaning to wear my fat stack of old Fanime badges back to Fanime, but I never get organized enough to do it.
Is your neck thick enough for that, Mike?
Yeah, right. Can you handle that?
I feel like I feel like that's the name of an upcoming terrible anime show. It's like, is your neck thick enough to wear all of the badges to the con? Exclamation point, question mark.
You're giving away gold, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Keep that to yourself and monetize.
So let's see. What did you do Friday, or were you there Friday, Sam?
Yeah, I was there Friday from doors open all the way through Monday till noon. I didn't really do a whole lot other than kind of like sit on the con floor, and every once in a while, and I went to Artist Alley a few times. I bought some prints in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to the dealer's hall. The dealer's hall, I guess, is worth mentioning because it has changed a lot over the years, and I think way for the better. So dealer's hall usually, like, in the past when, you know, we were big in the and more of the target audience for all this stuff. You know, there were people that would sell figures, there was a dude that would sell swords, and there was people that sold manga and anime. Now, all that stuff is still there, but it is a much smaller portion of the dealers in there. There's a lot more of kind of generic, like, hey, we sell like weird sticker things that are kind of, in a way, probably all bootleg, unlicensed merchandise.
Yeah, some like former Artist Alley people have moved over to Dealer's Room if they got big enough.
Yeah, so that's been a common complaint of mine, is that people that basically can't get into Artist Alley or don't want to for whatever reason will just buy booth space in Dealer's Hall. And I always objected to that because for that reason that I feel like that puts them more into bootleg territory. But I really didn't see any of those this year. I saw none of those. I'm more just talking about in general. There's the people that sell like bumper stickers or decals and things. That's their whole jam. There's a booth with like booty shorts, which was weird. But there's actually a lot more fashion oriented stuff, a lot more like boutique fashion booths, which I thought was super cool. I like, you know, socks, shirts, jackets, sweaters. I don't know if anybody knows, there's this game called Omori, which is
oh yeah, I know about it.
Yeah, so like I kickstarted this game and I'm there at Fanime and I'm like, why is Omori is here? And I feel like I kickstarted a fashion company, because that's like basically what they're selling is clothing. And
I mean, the game released, right? So
oh yeah, released years ago at this point.
Yeah, so now it's just merch. I mean, Undertale is not too dissimilar. Like, there's just the sort of release. I mean, Toby Fox did like the world tour of like trying to get that IP as like a collaborator with like everything he loves. So
yeah, it was successful too. The interesting thing that caught my eye about the Omori stuff was that they were selling also official Hololive clothing.
Oh, interesting.
That was interesting.
I guess that whole VTuber thing's probably, that space is so foreign to me, but I'm very aware of it just because so much of like the YouTube content I watch is tangentially related to it. So it's unavoidable almost. It's not that I dislike it. It's an interesting subsection.
It's a whole world, yeah.
Yeah, like I have a former coworker who's, you know, it's like late, like probably like super late 20s at this point, but he's a big Hololive guy. Like he even went to one of the concerts. I'm like, oh,
wow.
Okay. So, yeah, that's just the way the times change. It's good to hear that there's like more variety in the Dealer's Hall. But I felt like there was always like 8 booths that sold the same thing, like either like anime or, you know, whatever. And now at least there's like some diversity. Sorry, Mike, you were saying
One other thing, Sam, I'll assume this was the same as last year, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that would be different from when Dylan and Nick were at last at Fanime, would be that the Dealer's Room also has way more Japanese food options like than pretty much none back then.
I think that is true. I didn't pay attention to it this year, but I believe I saw like takoyaki and stuff. So,
whoa, they actually have like hawker stands inside of the Dealer's Hall.
No,
well, back in the far back of the Dealer's Hall, they have like
a food court.
At least they did last year. All of the lines last year, when I thought about it, were too long for me to actually try it. But
I mean, the longest line was for the weird Bob's soda thing.
Oh yeah, the craft soda or root beer or whatever, sarsaparilla, that thing was bad.
Yeah,
that gave you like the metal mug or whatever.
Yeah, you buy the metal stein or whatever you want to call it, and you basically get free refills the whole con. So that led to a long line there.
Sounds
which is
like,
fine.
I mean, sounds like diabetes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
yeah, I'm too old for that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But back, you know, in my college days, I would have loved the heck out of it, so I can see why they do good business.
Yeah,
the number of wild cherry Pepsis I would down in a typical club meeting. Let's not go there.
So did they, for this Bob soda thing, did they do a crossover on the stein? Did they, like, have embossed, like, a gate on it or something like that?
Wah, wah, no.
Wah, wah.
No, none of that. So yeah, Dealer's Hall was cool. I was super happy with it. I didn't buy anything, but there was lots more interesting stuff to look at for sure, which really pleased me. It's amazing how far just Fanime has come since, you know, again, we were the target audience like 20 years ago. There was a period of time where even where I was exhibiting in Artist Alley selling my garbage. And nowadays, there's absolutely no way I could get into Artist Alley. Like, there are amazing artists who make a living off this stuff getting rejected from Fanime Artist Alley because the competition is so rough.
Yeah, meanwhile, like, the first year I went to Fanime in 01, Artist Alley was a literal alley down the hall, and there were, like, five people in it or something. And it must have been free, because the one thing that I still have from that is, like, this Gendo Ikari's bitch coupon, redeem at your local Nerve HQ for one bitch, that was just a photocopied, you know, coupon that they were passing out for free as a joke based on redeath.
Jeez. Those were the days.
So yeah, Artist Alley has changed a little bit since then.
Yeah. Some people's livelihoods depend on Artist Alley.
I mean, even back when I was still going, I remember there were at least a few booths that were being run by people that were basically like actively working on stuff with Udon Comics. Like they were artists for like Street Fighter comic books or any Capcom, and like they were at Artist Alley and Fanime. Like, yeah, holy crap, you guys are like legit industry professionals that have booths and Artist Alley. So
you might actually be thinking of there's a Bay Area artist group called Bow Down Bay Area Artists United, I think, which had some, I believe, has some Udon people. I don't know if they still do anything anymore, but I'm pretty sure they were represented back in our day.
I mean, probably around, because last I went was around 10 years ago, so yeah, that's likely.
Although I guess that's right. When you were working staff and stuff, I think Bob Artis or that stuff was already getting pretty upscale by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I recall going through Artist Alley back because, you know, I just kind of had to ghost the shadow of my GOH, and they'd like to take a look around, especially fan art, because they're like, I want to see how it is in the States. And they're like, wow, this is high level stuff. I'm like, yeah, I mean, this person literally is published professionally. So
yeah.
Like, I remember talking about that. So yeah, I still have some old prints sitting in the closet somewhere.
Well, so I guess we've talked a lot about Fanime here. Do we have any other things? I think maybe we should go move on.
Well, I also did the panels from the main guest of honor, or at least the main guest of honor for me, the guy who, Kihara-san, the guy who was I'm not sure his exact position, but he was like head producer for at least Laputa, Kiki's, and Totoro. And this year was the 35th anniversary of Kiki's. So he, like last year, was the 35th of Totoro, and he brought a bunch of Totoro production materials. This year he brought a bunch of Kiki's production materials.
Cool.
Was showing them off on the document cam, and he gives good panel. He like shamelessly campaigned to be asked back at the end of his panel last year, and clearly it worked. And he campaigned again saying, hey, it's going to be the 40th anniversary of the founding of Studio Ghibli next year. And given that he managed to fill the main panel room entirely once and about 2/3 full the second, his second panel, then I think, which.
Wow, that's cool. Guests of honor, sadly, in the past have gotten really terrible attendance, so that's cool to hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, you attach the Ghibli name to it, and it's got to do well. And the his second panel was, like, I guess, I'm not totally clear, but I think he wrote, like, the Bible for some modern Godzilla movies and then turned some of that material into a book based on the Godzilla archives, so that was what his second panel was about, was Godzilla stuff, and he's also just gives really good panel. He's a funny guy and always is quick to respond to things. I just wish they would give him a little more time, because by the time you seat panels one and then do like junk-in for giveaways and have time to get out at the end, you've only got about a half hour of actual panel.
They should make that a 90-minute panel minimum.
They really should.
Can always be shorter.
Aside from that, he's just a really good guest of honor who has a way of getting the audience in the palm of his hand, which is...
Yeah, he sounds cool. He sounds like the kind of GOH I would love to hang around with for a day, because he just would
have a plethora
of experiences. So those are also
last year his second panel was about horror stories, because he goes around the world collecting ghost stories, and actually, as least he claims, he's the only person that Junji Ito has ever done a collaboration with, which just came out in English fairly recently.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, you don't get much bigger in this industry than Junji Ito.
Exactly.
We talk about living legend status, he's probably one of them. So.
Yeah, and also I guess he was an advisor on some of the Japanese horror films in at various points. So just a man of several interests.
Sorry, who was this again?
Hirokatsu
Kihara.
One of those people who's been in everything but isn't a person. Production name
coordinator
I recognize.
For Nausicaa.
Nausicaa through Geekies, I think, and then he and Miyazaki parted ways. Let's see, two fun moments from his panel. So there was a baby crying, and the embarrassed mother started exiting the room, as quickly as possible. And he was like, "You stop, please stay. We want you to stay." And then he pulled, I'm not sure. I think it was a pacifier or a sweet or something out of his bag, and actually left the stage and ran back to her and quieted the baby down, and then went back up on stage and was like, "We believe, especially for a Ghibli panel, that anime is for everyone, especially the next generation, or otherwise it won't have a future."
That's cool. In many ways, it seems like a Japanese version of Giles, just like somebody who's been in the industry forever and is just like a pretty down-to-earth person otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the other, let's see. So, then it went to very limited audience Q&A, and one of them was asking essentially how Miyazaki was to work with, because there were, rumors about that. Cough, cough. And he gave a diplomatic answer, which was that Miyazaki has incredibly high expectations for himself and believes that everyone else can also meet those expectations. So Miyazaki would be like, "You can do this. No, I know you can do this. No, I absolutely know you can do this. You can do this, and you are not leaving here until you do this." Which, is a fairly diplomatic way to answer that question. And he also told a story about how he was the motion model for Kiki climbing onto a broom. So Miyazaki was like, "Okay, first, you're buying a broom now." And he's like, "But I have other work to do." "No, you're the only one who can do this. Go buy a broom." "And then step onto the broom." "No, step onto the broom and make me believe you can fly." And apparently he was also the motion model for the cat bus, which he said at Totoro last year.
Huh.
That's cool.
Yeah, so one thing about being in the production department in anime, you get stuck doing all sorts of weird things.
Animation runner Kuromi.
Yep. Anyway, he gives great panel, and I really hope he gets invited back again next year. I can't see any reason he wouldn't, because his panels are always fun to attend.
Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah, hopefully he does make it back next year. I'll make a point to go next year if he's invited back. Sad that I missed it.
Just one point, line up about an hour or half hour to an hour in advance if you want a decent seat, because at least, especially for the Ghibli panel, it literally filled the room.
Yeah. Noted.
So
I usually
just
do that
blocked
anyways.
Out the hour before in my schedule as LineCon, and I was glad I did, in particular, because that was when I was coming back from lunch and got stuck in the metal detector line.
Oof. All right, well, in the interest of leaving just enough time to hopefully talk about one other topic here, I'm going to move us on over to talk about winter season. you guys, so the winter anime season to be in particular, not just the season of winter and how cold it is. What were you guys, what were you all watching, and what was notable? I don't think we need to go through everything because, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time, but what were people's favorite shows from the season? What about you, Dylan?
Going back there, looking at list stuff that I watched, I watched Solo Leveling, Dungeon Meshi, Metallic Rouge, Buchigiri, and actually I watched a bunch of stuff. Bang Bravern and Snack Basue and then Free Run. So I honestly, of those, the ones that I think are for shows, I'd be like, you should definitely watch them. Free Run is great. I have still actually haven't finished it. I've been taking a slow burn through the end of that show, and oh gosh, it's so good.
Indeed.
Bravern was surprise show of the year for me, probably. Super cool show that you're like, oh, this looks terrible. You're like, no, it's really cool.
I will say on Bravern, I feel the same way, but I also feel like it didn't quite cash its checks totally. I still think everybody should check it out because, and you can decide for yourself. Mm-hmm. You'll see pretty quickly if it's a thing you like or not, but definitely the biggest surprise.
Yeah. It's a very cool show. And then I think the other one that I keep coming back to and be like, you know what, this show is like, oh, it's okay. And then I'm like, you know what, actually is really good is Dungeon Meshi or Delicious in Dungeon.
Yep.
It's just...
Agreed.
It's one where I'm like, oh, this is okay. But I'm like, no, actually, this is a lot better than okay. This is actually really good. It's so well done throughout everything. Like, there's no bad segments in it at all. Mm-hmm. Like... the rest of the shows on that list, they're various levels of okay to meh. Snack Basue is also incredible and should be watched by no one.
Yeah.
That's my opinion of winter shows looking over my list.
Yeah. I think mine is pretty much the same as yours. Free Ren is, I guess, the only thing I would say more about, and that it's also amazing. That and Dungeon Meshi are just two, like, having two of those going at the same time is incredible, totally unbelievable. Both great in totally different ways, and have a real good depth to them of story and character. Like, Dungeon Meshi is, I guess they both have the goofy in them, but Dungeon Meshi is not a show that you would think has as much depth as it does.
Especially once they get going on the main plot of rescuing the sister and, like, involving the dragon. Like, once you get through that part and, like, you, not to spoil, I don't know how far people go, I don't want to spoil things, but just when that whole, like, arc is coming to a head, I was like, wow, this is not where I expected the show to go. And I was thoroughly impressed with the execution. And yeah, Trigger really nailed it on all the elements there. Obviously, the consistency of the art and animation comes through very clearly in that show. Like,
yes.
Yeah, that definitely, considering it was going head-to-head with Season 2 of Free Run, I put both of them right up there. Both excellent shows, and, you know, that's saying a lot, because I'm not big on high fantasy, but if it's good enough, I'll watch it, obviously. So, yeah.
Do you have any other standout shows, Nick, from
standout? No, I would say things that caught my eye, for not even, like, I would, for frivolous reasons, I would say, is Mashle Season 2 strictly for the opening. Like, Bling Bong Bong Born literally became a phenomenon for many months.
Yeah.
So, impressive. Good, great. I'm glad to see Creepy Nuts getting a lot more visibility. I think this is the beginning of probably their huge explosion of international fame.
Yeah. Animation quality in that show too is very good for
what you would think. I haven't watched anything besides the openings. I'll take your word for it.
fair.
Otherwise, things I watched that I thought were just okay. Witch and the Beast, okay. I wanted it to be better. It really wasn't. It was a pretty average show. It's pretty easy to pass. If you want something a little darker and grittier, then maybe. But otherwise, it was just okay. Only other thing I watched much of at all was, I guess technically Shaman King Flowers counts because it came out then, even though it didn't come out stateside till 6 months later, but I caught it while I was in Japan. Mm. If you're a fan of the original, then just keep watching. Otherwise, I would say there's not a lot to hold on to for it, because unless you watch the original, there's almost no point in watching this, since this is like a direct sequel. So,
oh wow, really?
Yeah, because it's literally like basically his son. So you can't, you really can't watch it, because it literally spoils the ending of the original in the first episode. So wow. You kind of have to watch the original unless you just want to skip that together. It's good though. If you like Shaman King, I would recommend Flowers. Before, it was only accessible as a manga up until, you know, before like, gosh, almost 20 years. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not much else aside from that. Yeah, Free Run and Delicious in Dungeon massively dominated winter for me.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, any standouts?
You're reminding me I need to finish those, because I haven't actually watched anything since we did our winter episode, whenever that was. So.
I haven't finished either of them yet myself, so. There's also more Urusei Yatsura during winter.
Yeah, I've only gotten a handful of eps into that because the group that I'm watching it with has been had availability conflicts, so I'll finish it eventually.
The problem with having friends and doing things with friends is solve that problem by not doing things with your friends, Mike.
Yeah, I know, right? We would record far more eps of this podcast if...
Do you guys want to peek a little bit into spring? I know, Dylan, you had this big spreadsheet of stats about spring, which I thought was interesting.
I think it's worth discussing, like, how the ranking is kind of settled now that spring is more or less done.
Yeah. I was particularly interested to see Konosuba up at the top, which is great for me. I think it's, like, the one of the few times that I think my favorite show of the season is also at the top of everybody's.
Is it really that surprising? I thought Konosuba was, like, super popular.
So. I didn't think it was going to be that. I agree. I was like, huh, really? Up that high? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I never really paid attention. I think until we started doing this podcast, I never really paid much attention to the rankings. And I think it's been a while since two.
Yeah, it has been.
So, yeah, it's great. I'm happy to see that it's popular, though, because, oh my goodness. I was just watching, you know, I haven't finished watching it. But it's so depraved, but still so funny and wholesome at the same time. Not as wholesome as the Megumin, but it's very good. Yeah.
The only show on here that I have any strong opinion of on why, on I guess a strong negative opinion of, is I don't understand why Spice and Wolf needs to be remade. When they announced this, I thought this was a continuation because they never finished the story. And then I watch Ep 1, it's literally identical to the Ep 1 from the original, and it's not even that old. Like, I feel like Spice and Wolf was circa 2010, maybe. Is that right?
Sounds roughly correct.
Sounds roughly right. I never watched the original.
It's great.
I love the original.
I highly recommend watching it. It's not that this one was bad. It's just to me feels like, why remake a show that's not didn't really need it, because it's made it's a relatively modern show and it should be easily accessible. So. I was just wondering why. I mean, it's fine. It's good. Like, if you like the original, great. But it doesn't offer anything else meaningful, except for, I guess, a minor spoiler of the very, very. Maybe what they're doing with this is kind of like how they did FMA Brotherhood, where they're restarting it so that they can finish it properly. Is the only thing I can think of.
But that's weird. So, like, Brotherhood, in that case, there was a huge divergence because the manga wasn't done at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And they had to just make up an ending for the original because... And then they waited till it was done, and then they went back and did Brotherhood. So, not saying it's apples to apples, but that's the only reason why I can see justification for restarting it. Again, I love the IP. I love Spice and Wolf. I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's about like, commerce. It's an anime about commerce.
Yeah, basically,
and the bonus is that there's a cute furry waifu in it, so it's like you know, that's if that's your thing, a double bonus. So
the previous TV was 08 to 09, so a little older than that.
Yeah, and that was close.
the light novel series has been ongoing since 2006 and is now up to 24 volumes, so there's certainly Jesus. More for them to do if they...
24?
Wow.
That's a lot of commerce.
That's a lot of light novels. That's more volumes than most manga get to. That's impressive. Yeah. That's really impressive. Okay.
A lot of words. More volumes than the manga adaptation got. That, at least the first one, had 16 and ran from 07 to 17. And there have been a couple video games. Another light novel series that's running 2016 to present and has 9 volumes.
My goodness, I didn't realize this IP was still going. Well, maybe that explains why then.
I don't know, that still doesn't really explain it to me, because like, there's got to be some catalyst.
Manga that's Money? Been running since 2019, eh? Several video games, yeah. So, and it sounds like they have enough material to keep going for as long as they want, basically.
Well, but that's like, why restart, though,
yeah,
right?
True.
That's the question.
They should have just continued then, yeah. I agree.
To be consistent with the style, or maybe, I can't remember how season 2 ended, maybe that didn't end the same way as the novels, so if they wanted to continue, they had to do something different? I don't know.
My general understanding was the ending of anime was basically like a cliffhanger directly from the novels, so you could have just continued with the novels.
I think that's right. And that's kind of my maybe slightly cynical guess, is that it's more of just an ad for the light novels, where you start over, like, you don't want to continue because people probably haven't watched the original, and you're trying to pull in new fans, so you start over from the beginning, and then they get hooked on the series again, because they're not going to discover the old one unless there's some buzz around it, so that's maybe why they did it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's 08, 09, we are like pretty far from it now.
Yeah.
Also, different TV network doing it this time than the previous times.
I mean, it's a whole different cast. I don't think anybody's recast from my recollection. So.
Oh, really?
Well, to be fair, my recollection is pretty old, and I don't remember exactly who the VAs were, but they sounded different from what I recall. So,
question. Off of topic of Wolf Lives, has anyone watched the Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night, the high dive show of the season?
I've been wanting to.
I watched the first episode.
How was it?
I haven't yet.
I liked the first episode, but it didn't seem terribly unique, but it wasn't bad. It was well made. It was competently made, well animated. So, I don't know. I've been meaning to go back to it, but it wasn't enough to get me like, oh, I got to see the next episode. So.
Okay. I was curious too, because like, it was like, all right, is this finally, we had like a breather last season or whatever, there wasn't actually a good high dive show because it was Chained Soldier, which was awful. And this one is like an original anime done by Doga Kobo, who did Oshinoko.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, like they got me the key art at least, so maybe it's good. So okay, I'll give that one a try. Let's see here. I haven't watched a ton of stuff from this season. I've been watching some of Kaiju number 8, which is great. It's fun.
Yep.
I don't have anything crazy to say about it. Like, it's nice adaptation. It's cool that Kara is doing TV anime with Production IG.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed. It's great. Yeah, I can't really say anything other than it's great, because if you've read the manga, then it's you know what to expect. But it's a great adaptation of it. They've treated it well. I have nothing to complain about.
You know what? I will be a little bit critical just to keep things spicy. I have been watching it, and I think that it's a good adaptation, but if I had one complaint, is that it feels too direct. Like, it doesn't feel like they're... Yeah, like, some of the times... I haven't done a comparison, but it feels almost like a panel for panel, like, shot for shot.
I feel like that's kind of in character for IG, though. Like, when I think about other IG shows like Haikyuu, like, very similar. Like, there's certain cuts that, like, literally they just, like, trace the manga panel. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think that's more of a nod to, like, how great the source material was to use as reference. But I don't disagree. I can see that being a criticism, where it's like, why animate it and have it be so close to the original source material that at that point? So I do understand that's take for sure.
I don't want to fault them for it, but like I said, like I think if I'm going to make any complaint, it would be like I wish they tried to put a little bit of their own spin on it. You know, they don't have to deviate from the story, but just kind of like, I don't know, experimental. That opening is really cool. Despite being all CG.
That was a cool opening. I hate that the opening and ending songs are all both full English and whatever. I don't like that. Doesn't make me pleased.
I thought it was pretty cool because they were good songs.
Yeah, so I think if the song matches the animation, then
The opening songs, much. The opening song's fun. I don't know. I don't like the end song, but the animation is cool.
Oh, the ending animation is great. It's very cute. The PC. I don't think I've seen anything like that before.
It's been a while.
I feel like I must have though.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's been a while though, which is fun. If anyone wants to watch it, as a quick sell out a show you might not have seen, Bartender Glass of God is actually, it's pretty fun, and it's one of the, it's like Hajime no Ippo for being a bartender. So like you learn like all the techniques of like making these various drinks, and like I see all the bottles on the shelf, I'm like, oh yeah, I have that bottle, yep, I know all those things, yep. They're drawn perfectly correctly, they have a good tie-in with Suntory, they take a trip to the Suntory factory, so I get to see if I want to make that trip during
so you're saying that if you're a liquor otaku, it's the show for you?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, big time. Yeah.
Well, I feel like the summer anime club crowd is probably watching that show then, because they are definitely liquor otaku.
If they're not, make sure they know and they check it out, because it's a fun show too. It's well done.
Side note: before we, I should probably be wrapping up here. On the subject of liquor anime, there's the PA Works. I don't know. I guess you would call this one of their Shigoto Mono series, this Komada Whiskey Family movie they made. I don't know if it's been licensed in the US yet, but this came out recently. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay.
I'll go around and see if anybody has any last thoughts to give about anything we covered this evening. So how about you, Mike? Any other thing you want to put in about shows or fanime or anything?
I think we've covered most of it. I'll give props to Giles' Tokyo Stroll book again, just because that is really cool. Even if I haven't had a chance to use it in Tokyo yet, I used it for some ideas for RP at one point, and it was thorough enough to have some interesting places to go for that.
RP being what?
Like role-playing.
Oh, okay.
In a Discord with some friends.
Cool. Nick, how about you? Any other final thoughts here?
I mean, I definitely want to go back to Fanime as just like a normal attendee. Not have to work. And, you know, they're definitely cool to work, but just being able to go and enjoy the con for the con. And it sounds like it's different enough now that it'll feel like a unique experience again. Mm-hmm. So it'll just be cool to see everybody in person as well. Obviously, it's like my home con. Because I wouldn't touch AX with a 50-mile foot pole at this point, like out of pure fear of being crushed to death in a crowd of a million sweaty otaku. So
yeah, or dying of heat stroke waiting to get in.
Yeah, or a combination of the two, very likely. but yeah, it sounds like it was pretty neat. It sounds like it's kind of now getting back to some form of normal post pandemic. So it's good to hear.
Yeah, this year felt pretty chill, despite whatever drama there was behind the scenes that I was trying not to pay too much attention to.
Yeah.
Although what I will say is it'll probably feel weird in that one of my direct reports lives in San Jose and he's a weeb, so he goes every year. So it'll be interesting if I end up running into him.
Oh yeah.
But no, we're cool. Like I bought him like a One Piece figure while I was in Japan, so we're on good terms.
Oh, nice.
It's one of those things like, hey, if he sees you there, remember you're seeing him there.
Yeah.
No, he knows full well I'm like an ancient weeb, so.
Right, you're an elder weeb.
Yes, an elder weeb.
Oh, whoa. But,
Dylan, how about you? Final thoughts?
Unrelated, but from the spring, real big fail on the part of the anime Windbreaker that has nothing to do with someone just like farting up a storm. That's just like, come on. That's the biggest disappointment of the spring.
Big thumbs down.
I haven't seen it, but there's no one is farting in their ER. I'm very disappointed.
Same. That's why I didn't watch it at all, because it's like, I don't see any farting in the key art, so this is garbage.
Yeah, I can see that. If there was, it would very much be a The Two of You show.
Yes.
Oh, man. I'd be all about that. So that's big thumbs down.
Okay. I think we did it here. Let's see. I think next episode we will probably be discussing Bakemonogatari first 4 or 5 episodes. I think we said we were going to talk about that maybe this time, but you know, as you have experienced, we talked about other things a lot. Did you guys remember what were the other things we might talk about?
Other possibly thing is talking about the show Juni Taisen.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yes. That was the other thing.
Yeah, for Bakemonogatari, it should be Eps 1 through 5, because after Ep 5 is the end of a segment.
Yeah, it's the end of an arc. Yeah, yeah. It's a 2-episode arc and then a 3-episode arc. So. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, with that, thank you for listening. And until next time, this is Amo Kenzoku signing off. Sadaba.